97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
We have our former Attorney General Andrew Bailey with us after 5 o'clock. He's going to be on site tomorrow in Manhattan for the 9/11 ceremonies and wants to reflect on the importance of the 25th anniversary. I mentioned John Ziegler at 5:30. We're going to talk about the Jerry Sandusky case and a lot of other things, too, because I don't know if you remember this, but it was interesting. Last year, this is the anniversary of the Charlie Kirk assassination, and John's daughter, who is just a little older than my daughter, I think she's an eighth grader, Lux is a sixth grader, Grace is her name, she got something from Charlie Kirk, and it was a signed hat. It was a really special moment, and we played the audio of that, and we're going to revisit that in the next hour. Plus, I will have audio cut of the day. Curtis Hauck is back with us right now on the Zoom. You can watch us on the YouTube or the Twitter feed this afternoon. Managing editor of Newsbusters at the Media Research Center. Curtis, how are you on this Thursday?
Good to be with you, my friend, as always.
Are you dialed into our election map controversy here in Missouri, which is chaotic and a complete mess?
It's a complete mess. I mean, I have no idea where to turn. I mean, like, by the hour. I mean, just over the last week, I can't imagine what you guys have been going through. I mean, but this is what you do, though. You're supposed to provide clarity for everybody here on 97.1 FM Talk.
Well, we try to do that. We've been doing it as much as possible. But I'm telling you, this thing has been confusing because it goes back a week ago. I think it was today. The Missouri Supreme Court weighs in unanimously. Then there's a federal judge that weighs in right after that. Then Brett Kavanaugh weighs in, refuses to issue a stay. Then there's this that happens. And then our Secretary of State is called into a contempt hearing today. But as it looks like right now, even though the Eighth Circuit still has to, you know, take this up under a preliminary injunction, it looks like the old maps will be in place for the election in November. Now, that's important because it was the new maps that were being used at the beginning of August. So you got a bunch of people out there, Curtis, who voted in this election that won't even have the opportunity to vote for the candidate that they voted on the first time that might have been the winner.
Right. It's nuts. That part absolutely gets you that, you know, wait, we had the primary to determine the people that would be in the general election ballot, and now we're completely changing it. It absolutely makes no sense. And of course, you're not really going to get a lot of national attention for that one.
Well, you'll get national attention when you lose, right? Like when it goes back to the old maps.
Yeah,
you won't
true.
Get that national attention if you don't. Now, I will candidly tell you that I personally put some of this, and I think a lot of people want to put a lot of this, on our Secretary of State, Denny Hoskins. He was supposed to come on my show yesterday and pulled out at the last minute. He was the one that was, you know, put in front of the Missouri Supreme Court and asked to explain himself this morning. Then they brought him back in the afternoon. And before that session is when he released a statement saying, look, we're going back to the old maps. I'm telling the clerks because our ballots are going out, you know, so this is one of those things that's very timely as well. Curtis Hauck is here from Newsbusters. What do you make of the midterm convention in Dallas? Honestly, as much as I try to stay on top of things because I'm a radio talk show host, this caught me completely off guard on Tuesday. I really didn't know much about it. What I did know about my Wednesday and Thursday night, and this has not been altered, is that I'm watching the NFL. I'm not watching any coverage of the midterm convention. And I think that was kind of a little bit of a mistake. I heard Trump was pissed that he had to compete with the NFL. Maybe someone on his team should have looked at the calendar, right?
Yeah, no. So folks should know that, like, the NFL games were scheduled here first.
Right.
This was not a situation where the RNC comes in and then the NFL is like, how can we screw the president? How NBC? How can we mess with the president so we can get out of having to carry a speech? Now, guys, all of this happened first. The game was Wednesday last night. The Seahawks and the Patriots, because of the Netflix game that's down in Australia, because it's technically Friday over there, they have to have it on Thursday here in the U.S. It just became a whole big mess. And as we know, this convention came together at the last minute. I was watching the convention last night. I did not watch a single second of the football game. Candidly, I wish I had, but, you know, here I am. You know, I think overall, I went in saying, this is stupid, this is pointless, I'm not really sure what this is. But I will say, I think there was more coverage of it in the liberal media, Mark, than I thought. CBS 24/7, the streaming platform there, and MS Now were the only two TV networks to not carry at least a portion of the president's remarks live. That was stunning to me. I was fully expecting CNN to not carry it at all, MS Now to plow ahead like this isn't even happening, but they all totally covered it. NBC News Now, ABC News Live, the free streamers that you can get on YouTube, they had the ABC crew that you see on Good Morning America and the Today Show. They had them working last night covering this thing. So I was surprised, and I'm glad the president's doing it, because you not only have to talk about what you're doing, you also have to talk about what the left is doing, because what I've seen is they're certainly not talking about what is Ms. Chevalier, Abdul El-Sayed, what a lot of these Democrats say that they want to do. They don't really go below the surface mark other than, oh, they want free health care and they don't like Trump.
Yeah. I do think that it was a little surprising to me. You know, I was going back and forth. I got off the air last night, and when I get in the car, I turn SiriusXM on and I listen to Laura and kind of what she's doing. Then I go to Aaron Burnett and see what CNN's doing. And they were both there on site when this thing was, you know, kind of getting started last night. So I was, to your point, a little surprised by that. Now, I don't know how much the messaging gets out. One of the stories today is about the $5,000 checks that he's promising, which I've guaranteed the audience will never happen. It's kind of silly. So no. I don't know how much they want to cover it of the reality of what's going on. But look, let's talk about Tallarico and Ken Paxton, because there's even new polling out today that looks poor for Ken Paxton. I think everyone thinks this is going to be a close race. In the end, the Republican probably wins. But man, Tallarico is not afraid. He's doing interviews with Fox right now. He's not backing down. I don't know if you have a sense of how the rest of the networks are covering that particular race. But obviously, between Michigan and Texas, that's going to be the focus here in the next 2 months.
Well, yeah, I think Ken Paxton is finding out just because you cultivate friendships with conservative influencers doesn't necessarily always translate into voters and immediate fundraising halls, that you do have to step up. Yes, the president and his super PACs, the NRSC can help you, but you have to raise the money yourself. You have to have the bandwidth. And the talking point out there is that he supposedly over July 4th went over to Ireland with his current young girlfriend. And that just shows a level lack of focus. Now, on the other side with Tallarico, what's interesting is he's starting to get testy here once, you know, Brooke Taylor from Fox News, Leland Vittert from News Nation, a number of networks got about 10 minutes with him in quick succession at this kind of staged food drive thing near the convention. And they brought up past remarks of his, and he simply tried to play it off as either, A, I missed the mark on transgenderism or fill-in-the-blank issue or capitalism, or Ken Paxton and Republicans are just trying to smear me with out-of-context clips. That part I don't think is going to work, because even last night, Garrett Hake on NBC Nightly News played the capitalism clip. So I'm not, maybe they're trying to help him kind of try and explain this away, but he sure doesn't seem like he's doing his part in trying to help them by repeatedly using, I missed the mark all the time.
I think he thinks, you know, here's an example, because I think he thinks he can just kind of do this and then the media will move on.
During the 2021 hearing, you said there are six biological sexes. Do you still believe that, standing here with me right now?
No, I've missed the mark on some of my past statements. I will be the first to admit it. What I meant is that there are two sexes, and then there's a small percentage of people with genetic abnormalities.
In 2023, you voted against SB 14. That was the Texas law banning transgender surgeries for minors and puberty blockers. How come you voted against that?
Because the bill was overly broad. And in fact, if you go back and check, I voted for a major amendment to limit the bill to banning surgeries.
All right, so that's just a little flavor of the Brooke Taylor stuff. But really, literally on every position, he flipped and, you know, basically said, and he pivoted to what people are really concerned about are, you know, diesel prices and gas prices. And by the way, you know, he might be right about that in Texas, because the economy certainly is going to play. But, I, you know, again, there's a long way to go. I heard Elon Musk is pouring a lot of money into that race in Texas, too.
Yeah, because I think the one, maybe about transgenderism, but I think him talking about wanting to dismantle capitalism and basically wanting to make the oil and gas industry kind of this archaic.
That won't fly in Texas.
No, it's not. Exactly. That kind of thing isn't going to fly. You really can't just say, well, I was wrong there. People understand that, like, you pivot to the general election, and then once you're elected, you may go back to where you were during the primary there. So that's definitely going to be a concern. Elon Musk, as you noted, is stepping up to the plate with his America PAC. We will see what happens. Hopefully we get some debates with these guys. But they're learning here that Tallarico may have learned some of the mistakes of Beto O'Rourke back then, you know, because Eric Erickson has pointed out that even though it was very close, Beto almost won, at no point in polling was Ted Cruz losing.
Right. I know. And that's what kind of concerns me on this one, because the opposite is sort of true. Curtis Houck is here from Newsbusters. You know, a few weeks ago when Dolly Parton died, they did this great tribute. They flipped it around very quickly on whatever day that was on CBS. It was a Wednesday or Thursday, and they had a tribute to her for an hour long. And the last part of the tribute was a 60-minute story that Morley Safer had done about Dolly Parton 17, 18 years. It was awesome. And what it also did, Curtis, is it sort of reminded me when 60 Minutes was must-see TV, you know, back then with Morley Safer and Mike Wallace and the cast that we all got to know. Now, this is the opening weekend of the new season of 60 Minutes, the first one since Barry Weiss took over CBS News. You have people that have left the show, like Sharon Alfonsi, Scott Pelley, and Cecilia Vega. You got some new names in here as producers. You have a couple of people who stuck with the show, Leslie Stahl being one of them. Do you expect different editorial content on this season of 60 Minutes?
Well, we shall see. I mean, we studied the last six seasons of 60 Minutes. Nicholas Spinato and our summer intern, Spinato is now full-time with us. We found of the political story, 78 or 76 were framed from the left and 16 were from the right. So about a 5-to-1 ratio there. I will say we do know of two of the stories. Usually there's three or four stories every episode. We know the one is a John Wertheim embed profile with the Los Angeles Rams. So that's usually at the end of the show because it's a more softer story.
Right, right.
And Norah O'Donnell's interview with one of the airmen shot down over Iraq. That is going to be must-see television. That is the kind of thing, as you point out there with the Dolly Parton piece, that 60 Minutes needs to be doing more of. Yes, it looks like there's interviews with Trump military officials, including Secretary Hegseth, that may be testy. But on the whole, the point is hearing this man's ordeal and what he went through and the heroism of our military. This
Can't
is
wait
kind
to
of
hear that. Yeah.
Good journalism,
right.
Must-see TV that I think 60 Minutes needs to do more of. And for Oliver Darcy and co. to claim, oh, it's going to have record low ratings, I think because this is their first get out of the shoot, I think a ton of people are going to be tuning in, especially after the doubleheader game on CBS. There's some rumblings. I kind of maybe have an idea of what the second story is, but I don't want to say for sure. But, you know, that this military story is going to be the lead. That's going to be everywhere. They're going to show his face. They got approval to do that.
That's interesting.
Massive.
Yeah.
And all of the teases, they've kept that part hidden. Because, you know, just like with book releases sometimes, Mark, they let all the good excerpts out. So
yeah.
By the time
you
buy the book, it's not as fun.
Look, I'd like to have some hope for 60 Minutes. And by the way, you know, as biased as they have been over the last, certainly the last decade, it's not like there was not some worthy reporting during 60 Minutes over the past few years. You know, when they get into, and you know this because you guys look at this at Newsbusters all the time, but when they get into some of the more feature stories or something that is, you know, more along the lines of human interest, I think it was even Scott Pelley that went to these amazing caves in Vietnam.
Yes.
And that was a great story. It had nothing to do with politics. It was eye-opening. It was dazzling visually. I didn't hear any stupid political bias. Those are the types of things where 60 Minutes can bring you into a different world. And, you know, I think this soldier is a perfect example. It's unique. You're not hearing it anywhere else. They have, you know, obviously they get this guy before anyone else. So I think that's cool. So I have hopes for 60 Minutes with Barry Weiss at the helm, and I just hope for a little bit more fairness. We're not acting as if no one wants them to turn into some conservative outlet or do we expect that, right? We just want a little bit of fairness, and we're victims here in St. Louis because Bill Whitaker, who remained on the team in the aftermath of the changes, is one of the guys that came here and lied about our, you know, circuit attorney and called us all racist because we wanted to get rid of Kim Gardner. We've been vindicated on that, but that's the kind of reporting that's got to stop. You know, the type of reporting where the 60 Minutes anchor, reporter, producer, if they go in knowing what the story is going to be as opposed to investigating a story and reporting on what they find, that's where journalism needs to head. It's been kind of going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, I think of the California bullet train story that John Wertheim did last season, towards the end there, that kind of said through like over two decades of and billions of dollars spent, not a single layer of track has been laid. And now it's going to be just Bakersfield to Fresno or something like that, if it even happens. So it's possible to do engaging enterprise journalism that appeals to a broad audience. It doesn't have to be all January 6th. It doesn't have to be all defund the police or gotcha stories about this Republican governor or Moms for Liberty. It is possible to have potent, valuable, influential journalism because, you know, I do think, yes, people make fun of 60 Minutes, but when a story is done about you on 60 Minutes, it does stick with a lot of people, especially ones that air during football season, like what happened with you guys out in St. Louis. That sticks with people that say, oh, I saw a thing on 60 Minutes about you guys.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. for sure. Curtis, thank you so much for coming on this afternoon. We'll see what holds, you know, what 60 Minutes holds for us here on Sunday. You have a great weekend. Enjoy football in 60 Minutes. We'll talk next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.